Zeit, so thank you once again for allowing me to try and offer some humble service. So this morning we will have, how do you call it, a thematical Bhagavatam class. It is under a certain theme, and this theme is giving and accepting shelter, the foundation of Vaishnav relationships and devotee care. It's 279. You don't have the Bhagavatam?
No. We have a Dutch one upstairs. But...
Yes. So actually, just for your information, I put a 5-session seminar on this topic, and each session is actually 3 hours. And I'm just giving this as a little appetizer, so to speak, just to give you some idea what a deep topic this topic of spiritual culture is, because even that, of course, completely connects with this topic of spiritual culture. And, well, maybe, I'm hoping that maybe next year you or I will get an opportunity to offer some little service to your community again. Manohar yesterday asked me, it was his birthday yesterday, and we came for a piece of cake and we had some little association, only very brief. And he didn't even know that this wasn't one of my topics, but he said to me, Maharaji, can you do anything about devotee care? And I said to him, yes, tomorrow morning, I'm planning to give somebody an introduction on this. So since this topic is actually a 3-hour session, you know, this is the first lesson you have there. So usually I do it more interactively, and there is so much question and answer and all this. So we will have to go through it a little bit more swiftly. You know, but it's simply meant to give you some food for thought, some stimulation there, and I'm sure there will be so many questions, but we will just not be able to get into it very deeply. But, you know, there's even the saying, a preacher should leave when it just gets exciting. You know, then we are meant to leave. Just so people are eager for another time. You know?
It's here. So this is the person. If you want to go forward,
I didn't know how to.
If you press this button, it goes forward, and if you press this button, it goes backwards.
Oh,
okay. Just forward.
just stay close by. I'm just a Bengali village girl, you know. I even refuse to have a mobile phone, you know. Oh, I would go mad with such guy there winning all the time. Oh, my God. So I'll just be such kind of choice, you know. I've got a computer, but that's about it. So just to keep the format of the Bhagavatam class, I want to discuss with you 279, which is, depending how spaced your handout is, it's in the middle of the handout, you see it has been 279, and I quoted a little section from the purport. So I'm taking the whole verse, because it's a nice starting, you know, to introduce the topic. It's always good to base things on the Bhagavatam. So that's why we just start. And also, in one sense, thank God it's not written on there, and we save a little bit of time. So I will just change once the Sanskrit and read the whole verse in whole purport, and then we begin like that. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
doesn't. It's not good.
Yavena Upata Gatam Vijavakya Vaja Nishplushta Purusha Vagam Vagam Nirvaye Pata Patantam Tadvati Totagati Putta Padam Tadere Dukta Vasuni Vasuda Sakalani Yena. We'll save ourselves the word for word, since you don't have it on the board anyway, and you know, just to speed things up a bit. Translation. Oh, by the way, what's the chapter entitled? Can we see this? It's something with Vena, King Vena in Pritu. You can't see the title. Okay, we'll leave it. Maharaj Vena went astray from the path of righteousness, and the Brahmanas chastised him by the thunderbolt curse. By this, King Vena was burnt with his good deeds and opulence, and was en route to hell. The Lord, by his causeless mercy, descended as his son, by the name of Pritu, delivered the condemned King Vena from hell, and exploited the earth by drawing all kinds of crops as produce. Right? So this is the section, you know, maybe you remember King Vena was extremely demoniac, you know, he was almost like a little Hiranyakashipu there. And the Brahmanas, they tried to instruct him, but he wouldn't listen. So, and then finally, they actually got rid of him. The Brahmanas, they cursed him by the thunderbolt, as we just read. So even that, you know, is sometimes the function of the Brahmanas. Yes. So now we've got a nice purport by Srila Prabhupada. According to the system of Varnashram Dharma, the pious and learned Brahmanas were the natural guardians of society. Natural guardians. The Brahmanas, by their learned labor of love, would instruct the administrator kings how to rule the country in complete righteousness. And thus, the process would go on as a perfect welfare state. That's the two sentences, or the one sentence you got on your handout there, because that's kind of the key essence thing of the whole purport. Yeah. Perfect welfare state. And there we've got already the devotee care in there. The kings or the kshatriya administrators would always consult the council of learned brahmanas. They were never autocratic monarchs. Yes, they were not. The scriptures like Manu Samhita and other authorized books of the great sages were guiding principles for ruling the subjects, and there was no need for less intelligent persons to manufacture a code of law in the name of democracy. Wow, Prabhupada, you know. So expertly he packages it all in, you know, in one sentence. The less intelligent mass of people have very little knowledge of their own welfare. As a child has very little knowledge of its future well-being. The experienced father guides the innocent child towards the path of progress. And the childlike mass of people need similar guidance. Wow, I haven't read for a while the whole purport. And I'm just realizing the whole purport is so excellent. It's a while ago that I read the whole thing. The standard welfare codes are already there in the Manu Samhita and other Vedic literatures. The learned brahmanas would advise the king in terms of those standard books of knowledge and with reference to the particular situation of time and place. So that's the function of the brahmanas. That according to time and place and according to the shastra, they give advice and guidance. And as Prabhupada says, it's not that only the kings need that, or only the administrators, but actually the childlike, innocent, and ignorant mass of the people. That's the whole point. Hang on, where were we? Such brahmanas were not paid servants of the king, and therefore they had the strength to dictate to the king on the principles of scriptures. This system continued even up to the time of Maharaj Chandragupta, and the Brahmana Chanakya was his unpaid prime minister, Chanakya Pandit. Maharaj Chandragupta, anybody knows when that would have been? How long is that ago?
It's in the Krishna Samhita from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but I don't know the duration.
Okay. Anyway, it seems that it was relatively recent, because Prabhupada says, even up to the time of Maharaj Chandragupta, so it can't be, thousands of years ago, relatively recent. Maharaj Vena did not... How do you pronounce this? Adhere to this principle of ruling, and he disobeyed the learned brahmanas. The broad-minded brahmanas were not self-interested. No, not self-interested. But looked to the interest of complete welfare for all the subjects. This is the principle which actually applies on all levels. We will discuss this. No self-interest, and simply the welfare, the interest of the welfare of the subjects which the brahmanas are guiding. They wanted to chastise King Vena for his misconduct, and so prayed to the Almighty Lord, as well as curse the king, ultimately. They were trying their best to give him good advice, but that's what, demoniac, puffed up, ego is doing. It makes you blind and deaf. You cannot hear, you cannot understand. The ears are blocked, the intelligence is blocked. And he simply could not understand. So therefore they had no other choice but to get rid of him. Long life, obedience, good reputation, righteousness, prospects of being promoted to higher planets, and blessings of great personalities are all vanquished simply by disobedience to a great soul. So in other words, King Vena, if he had anything valuable, he lost it all because he was not obedient to the brahmanas who were trying to give good advice. One should strictly try to follow in the footsteps of great souls. Maharaj Vena became a king, undoubtedly, due to his past deeds of righteousness, but because he woefully neglected the great souls, he was punished by the loss of all the above-mentioned acquisitions. In the Vamana Purana, the history of Mahajvena and his degradation are fully described. When Mahajpritu heard about the hellish condition of his father, Vena, who was suffering from leprosy in the family of a Mlesha, he at once brought the former king to Kurukshetra for his purification and relieved him of all sufferings. Mahajpritu, the incarnation of God, descended by the prayer of the Brahmanas to rectify the disorders on the earth. He produced all kinds of crops, but at the same time he performed the duty of a son who delivers his father from hellish conditions. The word Putra means one who delivers from hell, called Put. That is a worthy son. Okay. So, yes, basically Prabhupada is dividing the purport in two sections. First, he's giving us all these principles of how important it is to get this brahminical advice. Yeah. And he's giving the whole example that, yes, the administrator kings, they always had that. Even though they were very advanced souls, they were most of the times great devotees, but still they had such an aloof brahminical advisor who has no interest, no self-interest. He has no interest in power, title, position, influence, or this kind of thing. Absolutely no interest for himself. The only interest he has is the interest of the general welfare. What every individual soul needs to get uplifted, to make progress. So this whole topic is an extremely important part of Brahminical culture, which I personally strongly feel it has not been enough recognized in ISKCON. But that's not a criticism, this is just, you know, making the diagnose here. And after all, you know, ISKCON is a young movement, it needs time to develop and move forward. And, you know, I always say this, ISKCON goes through several phases. Phase number one was spreading the glories of the holy name, of Prabhupada, of Bhagavad Gita, and. Phase number two is, let's get established and organized. We need properties and farms and schools and temples and everything. And then phase number three is, let's boil the milk. Let's get on deeper levels of practice and understanding. There's several very nice letters, which I will not read now, where Prabhupada makes his point of the importance of boiling the milk. And he says, he even warns, and that was as early as 1972. He warns, you know, let's not spread too far and wide, and not, you know, without spiritual content, but let's just concentrate on training our devotees, you know, by constantly discussing and churning the nectar, so to speak. And like boiling the milk, when we boil the milk, it becomes thick and sweet. And then Prabhupada says, so now do like that. Boil the milk. In other words, let's become burfi-like devotees. Solid and sweet and deep. Yes. So this whole aspect of Brahminical culture this giving and accepting shelter is such an important part of this whole boiling the milk process. Yeah, and I truly feel for this most wonderful community here of Bangladesh, this is extremely relevant, and I feel Krishna all arranges it perfectly, and I truly feel so honored to have this opportunity to discuss this with you. It's really my greatest honor. I didn't even dream of this actually when I came, but yes, somehow Krishna arranges these things, you know. Yes, so have you all got materials? Who didn't get a handout?
I was not.
Yeah, could you just quickly run off? Also, Krishna Shetra Maharaj really wanted one. You got one. Okay, good. Yes, so because it is helpful to follow and to stay awake, you know, if you have the sheet of paper in front of you and you can follow up a little bit where we are and read along and so on, and sometimes there's even some dotted lines there so you can fill in a few things there and so on. So in any case, to begin with, you know, let us be clear in this, some initial realizations I want to share, that especially all of those of you who have been around for a few years, let's say 12, 15 years and more, I'm sure you have all noticed, probably also with pain in your heart, that so many devotees come and they stay around for a while, but then they seem to fade away and we kind of lose them. They're not remaining active and enthusiastic and inspired in the association of devotees. No doubt, maybe they do something there for themselves, but just that they don't want to serve in the association of devotees. I tell you frankly, this is going on all over the world. All over the world. Yeah. And yes, well, anybody who is, you know, a little more serious, they should come to this point and wonder, what is happening here? What are we doing wrong? What's lacking? You know? And so often, we always concentrate on how can we bring new people to Krishna consciousness? And we are very fired up about all kinds of outreach programs. But then, hang on, what about all those people, you know, who joined 25 years ago? What about them? You know, what's the use? I mean, I seriously came to the point where I felt, what's the use even to bring people to Krishna consciousness if we can't keep them alive for their whole lifetime? What's the bloody use, how we say in Australia? Yes, what's the use? No use. Yes, it's true, that's why I'm saying it. So, and this is how this whole concept of devotee care started. You might know there is this GBC strategic planning, which Gopal Bhattapalu heads up, and there's so many interesting committees. So it all started that there was a preaching committee, and in this preaching committee there was two camps. One camp said, yes, let's bring new devotees to ISKCON. And then the other side was saying, hang on, what about all the old devotees? What about them? Where are they? And then this preaching committee turned into the devotee care committee. And for quite a few years, there was no preaching committee. Meanwhile, they have a preaching, an outreach committee, they call it now. Yes. So, and for some years, I was a pretty active part of this devotee care committee. But then I kind of split off and Now I'm promoting spiritual culture, being Krishna's system for devotee care, actually. We'll have a little introduction to this on Wednesday morning at the Bhagavatam class. Yes, because no need to reinvent the wheel. You know, Krishna actually has given us everything. He's given us the perfect system of devotee care, which is nothing else but spiritual culture, actually. You know? And you will see, maybe, that, and I'm only learning myself, and I'm in the process of discovering all these things, that the more insights we get into this topic of spiritual culture, the more we realize, wow, you know, it's all devotee care. And for those who are more interested in that topic, not that I want to promote myself here, but I have put an article on this on Dandavats. So if you look there, it's got the same beautiful picture in the heading like Sudama getting his feet washed by Krishna there, which you have the original out there in the corridor. It's one of my favorite paintings. And I was very delighted to see the original one here. So I put a whole article about this on Dandavats. So I'm trying to bring a little bit of awareness to this topic. So in any case, yes, you know, just this phenomena that so many people come, they hang around for a while. They hang around for a while, but then they fade away. It shows something is lacking, and it clearly gives us this practical proof that the Bhakti Lata needs constant watering and protection. And nourishment, a bit of cow stool every now and again. So let us, on your sheet, you have this nice verse from Jiva Goswami, from Madhava Mahotsava. Though one usually ignores others in attaining one's goals, those aspiring for prema accept dependence on others with similar goals and tastes. Thus, cooperating with each other, they worked together, keeping in mind the goal of prema. So this is an excellent verse to introduce the whole topic of how devotee care is related to culture. Because Jiva Goswami already says it in this verse. Right? He talks about two different kinds of people in this world, which is basically the materialist and the spiritualist. Right? We read it once again. He says, though one usually ignores others in attaining one's goals. That's the materialist behaves like this. Right? He's got this attitude, you know, if I just endeavor for my goals and ignore everybody else, and not even only ignore, but push aside whoever's got the strongest elbows, he gets there. Right? He will be successful. That's the usual way of endeavoring, you know, for material goals. That's your average materialist X factors. And then Jiva Goswami says, those aspiring for prema, the spiritualist, they do something else. They don't act like this. They accept dependence deep within the heart, not financial dependence, of course. That's not what we talk about. We talk about internal dependence, taking shelter. Yeah. On others, and not just on anybody, but on those with similar goals and similar tastes, moods. And thus, cooperating with each other, they worked together, keeping in mind the goal of prema. So there you got already, you know, these two kinds of personalities in the material world, the spiritualist and the materialist. And they act very, very differently. In fact, 180 degrees opposite, because that's what the two cultures are like. Yeah? Materialistic culture means sense enjoyment is the goal of life. And whenever there is sense enjoyment, the goal of life, there has to be what? You tell me. Exploitation?
Competition.
Competition. What's competition based on? Envy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Aggressiveness.
Aggressiveness. Maybe, yes, ultimately, yes. But the key elements is envy, competition, and what was the other one?
Exploitation.
Yes. These are the key elements, you know, we can almost say, of relationships in the material world, in materialistic culture. You know, it's, in German we say, der Einzelkämpfer. You know, the rugged individual, we say in Australia. I'm so individual, unique, and special, and I can do it all if I'm just expert enough to push everybody else out of the way, you know. This is basically, you know, on your sheet you have the dotted lines here. Materialistic culture, sense gratification is the goal. Relationships are characterized by the following things you can list there, you know. Also, interestingly, it is very closely connected to the standard of life. Because as soon as there's more wealth, unless people are extremely God conscious, and unfortunately, usually they're not, you know, more wealth leads very easily to the fact that we make sense enjoyment the goal of life, right? If we have a lot of money in the pocket, we easily start making plans. How can I enjoy it? You know? So, and also, a higher standard of life, and I hope you don't take it personal because you live in a part of the world where there is a higher standard of life, but it's simply like that. Just pretend it doesn't concern you now. But as soon as there's a higher standard of life and more wealth, more money in the pocket, then there is that illusory feeling of independence, right? Because money becomes the security. And there is a feeling of freedom and independence. And there's also money, more higher standard of life, usually brings along more pride also. You know, money, having wealth, is a little intoxicating if we are not very Krishna conscious. You know? And yes, and that pride again leads to that feeling of freedom, independence, I know it all, I can do it all by myself. You know? In fact, in materialistic culture, to take shelter is not what people strive for. It's considered to be a weakness, a sign of a loser, a no-hoper. You know, he takes shelter. You know, that's the point. These two cultures, they're like day and night. They're just so opposite because they promote the completely opposite worldview. We will discover this more in the next study. So, you know, actually it requires a whole paradigm shift. You know? And that's ultimately what Krishna consciousness is meant to bring about. We were mentioning this in the other day. You know, and one side is the day of the materialist, on the other side the day of the spiritualist. You know, the materialistic culture, spiritual culture, it's like a broad scale, and in between is all different shades and grades of mixtures here. But ultimately, if we want to become a true spiritualist, we have to make this paradigm shift, you know. We have to, the day of the materialist has to become our night. Gradually, we have to strive towards this, you know. It can't be imposed artificially, you know, but we have to strive for this transition and transformation. Yeah, so these are the characteristics of relationships, basically, in general terms, in materialistic culture, you know, and they are somewhat superficial and external, because it's all around myself, my interest, my enjoyment. There's also very strongly this business deal mentality, I scratch you back, you scratch mine, you know, and it's a business deal in terms of sense enjoyment of some kind, can be gross, can be most subtle. I give you some, you know, some support and promotion, and you become my follower, you get some little you get some, yeah, some privileges, that's what I was looking for. So these are all subtle ways of business deals. Even the demigods are making this business deal. You are my follower, you worship me, and I give you some material benedictions. You know, it's nothing else but business deal, you know, actually. So it sneaks in, often very subtle. You know, sometimes even devotees, we can take this mentality of being little demigods or something and giving out some benedictions and privileges in order to establish our superior position. Prahlad Maharaj also talks about that this is not a pure master, you know, who gives material benedictions in order to establish his superior position, you know. Okay, so yes, the self-made man, you know, these are all terms of this kind of, you know, materialistic relationships. Strongly influenced by impersonalism. It's just me and my program. And sorry, I'm busy. I have no time for anybody else here. And relationships are rather external and superficial. I like to call them Harry Bowl relationships. I'm sure we all know what that means. Hi, Bob. How are you? Nice, fine. Hi, Bob. Very well. You know, but not more than that. Not much more than that. You know? So now, in spiritual culture, relationships are very different. They're actually, all you have to do is take the opposite of whatever we said. Jiva Goswami says it already. One accepts dependence on each other with similar goals and tastes. So that means, you know, internal dependence, that means it's based on humility and respect. You know, materialistic relationships, respect is, oh, especially in this Kali Yuga, it's really rapidly disappearing. This whole term of respect, people don't even know what it means. Yes, and basically, spiritual relationships are based on this exchange that the seniors uplift the juniors affectionately, caringly, uplifting the juniors. And the juniors, they inquire from the seniors and offer respect and service. This is the loving exchange. You see? That's giving and accepting shelter. In spiritual culture, relationships are naturally based on this, giving and accepting shelter. It's natural. Very natural that the seniors want to share with the juniors their fear, compassion, they want to uplift and inspire and guide and share some wisdom and life experience. And the juniors, gratefully, they take advantage of that in submission, in humility, with respect, and by offering service. Tadvidi Panipatina Pari Prashnena Sevaya, inquiring submissively, offering menial service. That's not only there with Guru, but it's there on all levels with any senior. Even the marriage relationship is nothing else but giving and accepting shelter. Yeah? And not only the husband gives shelter to the wife, but the wife also gives shelter to the husband. And both serve each other in respect. But nevertheless, the husband is the overall shelter, you know. Yeah. Yes, so now you know, understanding understanding clearly how different, you know, these two cultures and their relationships are. If we ever in future, next year maybe, do the whole seminar, we will have so much more time for discussion and everything, and it will probably then become more clear how much we actually need some little support, you know, some structure in order to help us make this paradigm shift, in order to help us to cultivate this mood of giving and accepting shelter. Because we are heavily surrounded by materialistic culture. Definitely. Western Europe, you know. And it's interestingly to see in Eastern European countries, we've got quite a few people here from Eastern Europe, already there, life is more simple, people are more poor, this giving and accepting shelter is more natural, simply because people realize if you stick together and help each other, you get further than just doing it all on your own strength here, you know. And that material dependence does help also to take spiritually independence, you know. So we do need some help. And of course the first step in this is just to bring the topic on the table and become aware. Become aware, you know. Become conscious. Like Prabhupada was always saying, in order to become Krishna conscious, we first have to become conscious. So there are so many things which we are not that conscious about, you know. And giving and accepting shelter is one of those topics which we are not that conscious about. And the more we become conscious about, the more we can realize, yes, I somehow have to put this in my life. I first of all, I have to take shelter, and sooner or later, I want to grow up and qualify myself to give shelter also. You see? So now, on your sheet, you have one very wonderful statement from the Garuda Purana, which is also very profound. One cannot be liberated without association with a pure devotee of the Lord. We all know that. We have heard this many times. But now the second one is not so clearly understood. And unless one shows mercy to those in an inferior position, one's life will be superficial. Wow. Yes. That's the point. Unless we come to the stage when we truly want to reach out and want to sacrifice ourselves, you know, to uplift inferiors, our life is simply damned superficial. Because it's selfish. It's just I, me, and mine. My spiritual life, my sadhana, my program, my trip to India, my. Yes, that's the point. And not only our life will be superficial, but actually our relationships. And I've really noticed it. I'm the kind of person who always tries to deeply analyze and get to the roots of things, you know? That's why I'm calling this whole topic of culture exploring the roots of spiritual culture, you know? Yes, and I'm always trying to analyze and observe and see what's going on, what's missing, what's the actual root of the problem. You know, because often we just tend to give the patching up solutions. You know? But no patching up. I'm not into patching up. I want to get to the root. And you know, also because I'm actually by training, I'm a physiotherapist. I used to work as a physiotherapist in Germany. So I still have this approach of a therapist and giving the treatment and the medicine and looking what's the diagnosis here, you know? And it's not a bad approach, actually, you know, because we are all diseased. We all have the material disease. And this is really what we have to do. We don't want to just have painkillers or something, you know. No. Let's get to the root, you know. And let's give the treatment properly, you know. So I've really observed this. And all these things has taken me many, many years. You know, it's not that I got these realizations overnight or something, but really many years of analyzing. That I understood, just recently I understood, you know, that yes, this is the problem. Why sometimes we have this big layer of impersonalism in our temples. And I'm not talking about you here, I realized it in another country. I'm not going to even say which country. But this is the point. Because see, in materialistic relationships, the basis is sense enjoyment. Let's enjoy together in some way or other. So, as devotees, we know we don't want that. So we try and get rid of that one. But we haven't replaced it with something deeper and more meaningful. Right? Maybe some people have individually, but not, we haven't clearly recognized it, you know? And that's what we have to replace the sense enjoyment with, giving and accepting shelter. And then the relationships will be deep and meaningful. Otherwise, they will be just Hari Bol relationships, and everybody sits in their rooms and comes out and does all their schedule and program and disappears back in their rooms. You know? And there's no giving shelter and no taking shelter. That's what makes it a deep and meaningful relationship. The giving and accepting shelter. Yes. It's very clear. To me anyway. And even philosophically it's clear, you know. And because it's kind of such a new, you know, movement, it just takes its time. You know, like 20 years ago, it was just not the time to talk about these things. We were busy with other things, with more pioneer stuff. You know, but now It's boiling the milk, and now we have to recognize, yes, giving and accepting shelter, that will make a relationship deep and meaningful. Then we become personalists. That has to be the basis, not sense enjoyment. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur was saying, I wish that every selfless, tender-hearted person of the Gaudiya month will be prepared to shed 200 gallons of blood for the nourishment of the spiritual corpus of every individual of this world. Wow. That's what it means to nourish one individual person's bhakti lava. 200 gallons of blood. That's a lot of blood. And very clear, you know, the dictionary cannot shed that amount of blood for every one of his disciples. You know? So obviously, we all, sooner or later, when we qualify ourselves, we have to donate a few drops of blood. Somebody has to do it. Yes. Also, very clear, as we go through different phases of life, we always face new challenges. Right? You know, a young person might be in the brahmacharya, brahmacharini ashram, then he or she gets married, new challenge. Then he or she becomes father and mother, new challenge. Then the children become teenagers, wow, new challenge. You know? Then maybe we are around 50, 55, we are meant to move on to vanaprastha ashram, new challenge. Maybe some of us might even take sannyas or something, new challenge. Some of us might even have to take up the service of guru, new challenge. Temple president, do you see so many challenges? So, it's only intelligent, you know, to take shelter of somebody who has more experience dealing with that same challenge as we're facing. And there is always somebody around who's got more experience with that same challenge. So if we are humble, you know, and we have respect, then it will be most natural that we inquire. We want to have some guidance here. Yeah. Yes.
Will it be possible for you to be continue this evening? Or it's too intense?
It is possible. I put myself down already for the Bhagavad Gita class tomorrow evening, and afterwards I thought, wow, was this really the right thing? But, well, yeah, maybe we should. Yes.
Time is running out.
Yeah, time is running out. And that's the thing.
I think you need a couple extra minutes, but it's not going to do it.
Sorry?
I'm willing to give you extra couple of minutes, but it's not going to do it.
No. And we do want to also have time for questions, yes, and all this, you know, because it's such a good topic, you know, such a relevant good topic, you know. Yes. All right. Well, then, do we want to have now a couple of minutes for a few questions, if anybody has some questions? Because as I said in the beginning, this first session is actually a 3-hour session in the whole seminar, you know. That's why it's just a bit over-ambitious to try and squeeze it into 1 hour or something, you know. But are there any questions now?
I'd like to share an experience that happened recently in Brazil. Try to be quick. I was visiting a temple and I met an old friend, like both of us have been around for 15 years about. And then, but we were discussing the whole night because I was very concerned that the mood there was not good in the yatra there, and there are lots of fighting, competition among the devotees, and not good relationship. And you know, discussing the whole night, and then I got some insight. I thought there is too much. Everybody's trying to be good, like they're trying to be good devotees, but they don't see that point of connecting and depending on each other. So they want to be good by pushing others down and not accepting and recognizing and appreciating the qualities of each other. No? So then we had an idea that the next Sunday program, we got the devotees together and gave papers with the names of every devotee in the room. And we did, usually people do the secret friend, I don't know how to call it in English, like you have to give a gift.
Ah, yes.
We did a secret seva. Yes, so we get the name of someone and have to do some service to that devotee without the devotee knowing who did the service. Mm. You have to find out what that devotee needs and do that, but he cannot know that you did. That was such a nice experience that everybody was trying for the whole week. Before the next Sunday, everybody had to find out what the person needs, do that service, and nobody could know who did. So that was one way that we found that we
did the same exercise once in the devotee care committee too, because there was also quite a bit of storming there, and we needed a bit of a team building exercise. Well, that's the point, and maybe we can finish on that note, that this conditioning is just so deep, you know, because we have spent so many lifetimes already here in this material world, and the subtle body carries so many impressions and attachments from previous lifetime. We carry so much luggage with us, and this is such a deep, deep conditioning. Yeah? And to actually get rid of this is not that easy. It really, it's not that off just by chanting Hare Krishna and putting a dhoti or sari on. We are transcendental in all this. It's a whole big internal heart operation there, you know. Very, very deep thing. And the very last point, Goloka Dham, there's a huge community waiting for us with unlimited amount of living entities or serving in complete harmony, assisting each other. There is strict hierarchy there. It's not everybody's just doing their own thing or something. No, because hierarchy means divine order. It is Krishna's order. And there's such, you know, we are assistants of assistants of assistants of assistants, and we serve and assist each other in complete harmony. And only then we can make the best possible offering to the Lord. And if we want to go there one day, we're going to have to practice here, you know? Yes, yes. And that's why we have such wonderful communities, which are not different from the spiritual world, if we manage to more and more transform, you know, our heart, basically. Okay. What time do we continue?
7:30. After Gurarati is the Bhagavad Gita class.
Okay.
Normally it goes to quarter past 8. I will make an effort to give you full hour there. It's pretty square there. At quarter past 8, there are 8 for bhajans.
Okay. Also, of course, the danger we have that people will come who didn't participate in this now. But what to do? All of you, if you are interested in the topic, please come again tonight. And also, I do want to quickly take the opportunity. I hope our temple president doesn't mind. Some of you know already, we are having this course in Goloka Dham, Men in Spiritual Culture, on next week, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, with Thursday being the arrival day. And I have some little leaflets here still, and since this is the last stop before going to Goloka Dham, I'm going to throw them out anyway. So that's why I thought, if anybody wants to take a leaflet, there's the website where you can get more info, or the ladies can take it to their husbands or something. So I'll simply put this here, and you can take one if you like, and otherwise I'll throw them in the bin. Okay, thank you very much. Shubha Prabhupada. Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.